Welcome to the Hoopsite Podcast. My name is Alex Kennedy. This is episode number 220. We post new episodes twice a week, so be sure to check back and subscribe. Joining me today is one of the best NBA reporters in the business, Sam Amick of The Athletic. He does a terrific job covering the league, and you can follow him on Twitter at Sam_Amick. Sam, thanks for joining me. How are you?
Alex, thanks for having me. I'm hanging in there like everybody else these days. It feels weird to say I'm doing well, but I'm blessed and just in holding pattern, brother. You know what I mean? Like on the same street in my Sacramento suburb for quite a while now, and seeing the same neighbors every day and seeing the same sights. And during a time of year when we're used to running around and being crazy covering the playoffs. So I'm good, but it's good to hear your voice, man. It's been a long time. How are you?
I'm doing well. I really appreciate you joining me. I know things are crazy right now, so thanks for taking time to do this. You actually just wrote a terrific article that had some terrific reporting. You and Shams Charania teamed up for The Athletic. Basically, the NBA released a 113-page manual that broke down their health and safety plan for the NBA whenever it resumes play in Orlando. And I want to break down some aspects of the NBA's plan. Let's start with the optional wearable device that the NBA is offering to players to check their vitals and things like that. Can you explain what that is and how it'll be used?
Yeah, I mean, it's an issue of some consequence, I think, because I think, you know, in the agent community and by extension, the player community, anytime you start putting bands and rings on human beings that have any sort of tracking capabilities, there's a lack of comfort. And so I do wonder going forward, Alex, like, you know, if there's going to be much pushback on this front. But the one you're alluding to, it's an optional wearable device. And admittedly, I'm stealing from our story here, that it checks your body temperature and your respiratory and heart rate to just take a pulse, so to speak, on some of your possible symptoms. And if you have symptoms coming, you know, but maybe you're not in full blown symptom mode, then it's going to see it, you know, well in advance. And then conceivably this would be in between testing. If you had just been infected, it's going to help speed up the process of identification. And ultimately if somebody was positive, isolation and trying to minimize the impact of somebody who was infected.
Yeah, if a player tests positive, they'll be moved to isolation housing. They'll be, you know, they're quarantined, and their team will continue playing while the player is quarantining. They can't return until they're asymptomatic, have two negative tests consecutively, 24 hours apart. And then there's also going to be infectious disease doctors and cardiac screenings and things like that. What I took away from your article and just everything we were kind of seeing about this manual, it seems like the NBA's plan is really in depth. It seems like they've prepared for every possible scenario. You obviously read the entire thing. You know, what were your thoughts on it? Do you feel like they've prepared well?
I do. If I was a part of NBA PR and not a media member, and I know it's easy to play Monday morning quarterback, I think some of this information, even if it wasn't finalized, should have found its way into the public space much sooner. Because I think what happened here in terms of the timeline and where I think the league created unnecessary problems for itself is that players, you know, I guess one Friday ago, They agree to the Orlando plan by way of team representatives voting, and as you know, it was 28-0. But the information was still relatively minimal in terms of all the specifics regarding health and everything we saw in this memo. And I think the absence of clarity on the behalf of the players and the fact that they just didn't have really clear answers to the most important questions when they voted is why you, at least partly why, in my opinion, you're seeing some players, you know, that showed concern and that basically said, well, my team might have said yes, but I'm not really digging this because I'm not going to assume that you're going to keep me safe. I need to know the information. So they look like they've accounted for everything. I just think that the delivery timing wise, should have been sooner. And now they're having to, I think, kind of clean that up a little bit, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. I was kind of surprised that, you know, some of the players' concerns weren't addressed sooner or that these conversations didn't happen sooner. It'll be interesting to see kind of what happens, and we'll talk about that in a bit, about the players and kind of how they're split in terms of coming back, and some guys want to sit out, some guys don't. But let's talk a little bit about the what are the rules around leaving the Disney campus? Because I know some players have said, oh, it's like basketball jail, and, you know, they didn't like the idea of being in a bubble for up to 3, 3.5 months. You know, what are the rules about guys leaving the campus, and how will those rules be enforced?
So in general terms, it is expected that guys will not leave, but you notice that the language that the league uses is, you know, and I don't have that part in front of me, but that it's an expectation, you know, not a requirement. The way it was generally described to me in kind of informal terms is that if you have a steakhouse that you want to go to that's outside the bubble and you just got to have that particular place, that's just simply not a good enough reason to leave. If a member of your family passes away and there's a funeral that you want to attend, then that's a conversation that can be had. But then you're going to have testing upon reentry. And I'll try to find, I don't want to misspeak on this front, but I believe, you know, potentially some quarantine, not like a week long, but maybe a couple of days when you come back. So I think it's going to be a pretty big deal for guys to leave because, as you know, I'm sure you've heard some of this chatter. You had some players who initially were thinking, okay, let me just rent a house, you know, just outside the bubble for my family, and then I can pop over there every once in a while to visit with them. And those types of things are just not going to be as easy as some players thought.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I think a lot of players are going to struggle with this. I know there's been talk too about how family members can't show up until I think the second round of the playoffs. That way there's enough space. So, you know, it is a lot to ask of an employee to be away from their family and friends and basically just focus on work for several months. But that's why players have the option to opt out. Whenever I was reading your article, I kept thinking about how Disney just makes so much sense as this location. You know, there's been a lot of talk about it. And I actually had Keith Smith on the podcast, and we kind of broke down why Disney is a great location to do this, because they already have, you know, entertainment options. They already have so many different things in place that can now be tweaked to fit the NBA plan. And I think the use of the Magic Bands is a great example of that. You know, it controls access to rooms, secured areas. Now they can use it for testing areas and different things like that. So, you know, guys, if they're positive or they're showing symptoms, then, you know, their band may show red and may not be allowed to go to certain areas and may need to get medical attention right away. If it's green, they're good to go. I look at some of these things. It seems like Disney already had a lot of these things in place and they can just kind of tweak them. Do you think that's one of the reasons why Disney was selected?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you have the elephant in the room of the business synergy between the league and ESPN and Disney, and the fact that it's their main television partner is owned by Disney. You know, but yes, the logistics made sense for a lot of reasons. But, you know, there's also a financial advantage that comes with Disney being able to recoup some of this revenue that was lost during this time. You know, I think the one thing that I have had crystallized about why I do think Orlando was a better option than specifically Vegas is that, my goodness, ever since you know, this was being debated and before we knew it would be Orlando, you know, Vegas has now opened up. Vegas, to me, it looks like a nightmare situation potentially for NBA players. When you put them in that environment, even if you try to create a bubble, that would concern me even more than Orlando. And Orlando concerns me a lot because, as you know, living there, the numbers have spiked recently when it comes to coronavirus, and not just statewide, but in Orange County near where Walt Disney World is. So that stuff worries me. Beyond that, you know, it made too much sense. Well, and I know I sound cynical, but once you started seeing Bob Iger's name and hearing Bob Iger's name, you know, the longtime CEO of Disney, that he was on conference calls with the NBA, even before the Orlando idea had been reported, you kind of knew where this was going. These are two entities that live in the same space. And even Chris Paul, president of the Players Union, has a longtime relationship with Bob Iger. And so it just checks a lot of boxes, even if you got some players who are a little worried about being bored and just not having enough things to pass the time to do.
Let's talk about that, because this is mentioned in your article too, the entertainment options and how players can spend their free time while at Disney and in the bubble. Obviously, they're not going to be, you know, going to the theme parks and things like that, unless they shut it down. And, you know, possibly there was some talk about opening up some amenities to players and making sure that everyone's social distancing and that they're not coming in contact with the public. But what are some of those options that are being thrown out there to keep guys entertained?
So I like the way somebody I wish I could give credit. I forget who put it this way. It was a tweet that I saw that said it's basically like a cruise ship without the ship and without the water. It's like, you go on a cruise ship and it's the same idea. You're stuck here by choice, but you chose to be here and you're stuck on this boat. And how can we keep you entertained? And so you're talking about hotel amenities with a player's lounge that's going to have video games, naturally it's going to have NBA 2K, arcade gaming, which I thought was great for an old school dude like me. I don't know if you're talking Centipede or Pac-Man or what you're doing, but good old fashioned arcade gaming, ping pong, which this was one of the details that made the rounds on Twitter last night, was people chuckling about how, in the memo, it specifically tells you no doubles ping pong because of social distancing. You can't play doubles ping pong. And, so they're getting down into the nitty gritty in terms of trying to keep these guys entertained, but also keep them safe. You can have movie screenings, DJ sets, which, I don't know what that might look like. It's not, clubs inevitably or inherently rather would scare the hell out of me as far as from the sanitary component. So you're not trying to recreate a club, but, some kind of environment where guys can chill and have good music that they enjoy. And the list just keeps going from there. Golf, I think, is going to be the number one recreation with players and getting out of the golf course and stretching your legs and obviously being safe with it. So all kinds of options and just a matter of is it going to be enough? Because this is a 4 month stretch, Alex. That's the one thing that, I mean, you're talking 4 months for the guys who get to the finals. So not everybody, but it is a long time where, like we talked about off air, your family's not going to be there in the beginning. The downtime is going to be great. You don't have the travel time that you normally would when you're in the playoffs, and this the downtime is going to be something that I think guys are having a hard time filling.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's going to be, I think a number of guys, even before other concerns about resuming play popped up, that was one of the big things that you were hearing from players is that this is a long time and this is going to be really difficult. And I think a number of guys maybe misunderstood. In the beginning, they were thinking, oh, cool, we're going to be able to hang out at Disney and we're going to be able to, go to all these different
Oh,
restaurants and
yeah.
all that. They didn't understand, oh, no, I'm going to be trapped in this hotel. I think. The details, once the details got out, players were like, oh, wait, this is
Yeah.
not going to be just a vacation.
It's gonna, I mean, I part of me can relate to it because I don't know yet, but let's say I do end up going and I do end up reporting from inside the bubble. It's almost worse that Disney World's gonna be right there staring at you and kind of taunting you, if you will. Like, you can't go. It would be a blast if you could go jump on the rides and have that be a way to pass the time. But I don't see that happening. Maybe there's certain experience components within Walt Disney World that they'll open up, but the rides I think are going to be a non-starter. And so, I mean, I remember one agent telling me, Alex, and just again, this stuck in my head where he said, listen, man, he goes, if you get bored in Vegas, you can leave your room, go down to the table, and play some craps. You get bored in Orlando, you stay bored. Like, that was the cynicism, which, no offense to Orlando faithful, but that has been the concern from the player side.
No, it makes sense. Robin Lopez and Brooke Lopez are going to be devastated. They're going to be struggling with Disney right next to them and not able to go.
Right.
I'm curious though, you mentioned this. Some players are concerned about people coming and going. And there's been some talk about what's going to happen with D Disney staffers. They can come and go, they can leave the bubble and then go back to work the next day. Some of them aren't going to be required to get tested. So is that a concern? And what's the NBA doing to make sure that doesn't become an issue?
I don't have full clarity there because right now all I have committed to memory is that the league is saying that those particular employees will not be interacting at all with players and staff. Now that I just think that sounds easier, or more simple than it actually is, because I want to know about the housekeeping component. Because even if that player is not in that room at that time, I mean, all it takes is one, finger rub on the counter and leaving a germ behind that gets picked up by that player when he returns to the room later. As we know, this disease can be transmitted in that kind of fashion. That's why they say to wipe off all counters and obviously wash your hands, don't touch your face, and all of those things. But specifically, that's the one that makes me nervous, is that, and I don't think I'm speaking out of turn or incorrect here, but the people who would be cleaning their rooms would not have been tested. And that worries me because, okay, they didn't have direct interaction with them, but if they breathed in that room for 10 minutes, and certain particles were still in the air, and then that player came back, you know, maybe shortly thereafter. I just want to learn more about that, because when you hear the phrase bubble, that's just it. That's not what this is. You can't call it a bubble when you have regular folks coming and going every day and not getting tested, even if you're trying to keep them farther apart.
Right. And I think players are going to be frustrated, like, okay, they can come and go, and I'm basically coming in contact with them, even if they're not right next to me, and yet I'm stuck here. I think there's going to be some frustration over that. One thing I know the NBA's talked about doing is they're going to have all league and team staff wearing a proximity alarm that will notify them if they spend more than 5 seconds within 6 feet of another person who's wearing one of the alarms. Players will be encouraged. I guess it's optional, but players will be encouraged to wear them as well. You know, that could help. But like you said, if someone touches a surface or someone, you know, if someone sneezes, then leaves the room, there's still that issue. So, you know, I think that's a creative way to kind of make sure guys are social distancing, but there are still some concerns about other ways that you know, COVID-19 can spread. But yeah, what are you hearing about those proximity alarms and how that will work?
Yeah, that one's interesting. You know, again, the theme here that I'm curious to track, sorry about the noise, I was trying to cheat and look it up here, is that, you know, I don't know if you're hearing any of this, but like, if you go back to the Magic bands, Alex, like, and again, I need to connect with the league on this, like, there's some agents who kind of felt like there was a tracking device component to the Magic band. And honestly, this goes back to when Michelle Roberts, you know, executive director of the Players Union, had said a few months ago to ESPN that she had kind of talked about her concerns about restrictions and used the phrase that it sounded, you know, somewhat like incarceration. Now, honestly, when she said that, and I'm just trying to be authentic here, I could not believe she went there. I thought that was too extreme. But, I mean, and it's certainly not that. And so let's full stop. But now that I've gotten eyes on a memo like this, and now that I've, you know, you try to put yourself in the player's shoes and think about things like devices all over you and you don't even know how to move because you're afraid you're going to break a rule, and anonymous hotlines, which we didn't even mention, where, you know, players or people who might be violating policy can be essentially snitched on. Like, you know, I kind of understand a little more where her head was at when she made that comment. And the alarm device is another one that I see the value. I see the benefit, but my gosh, at a certain point, you know, I don't know if you remember this old movie, but it's starting to feel like the Tom Cruise flick, you know, Minority Report, where, you know, everybody's just, you know, it's robots monitoring the world, and it's just a little creepy. So that's the comfort level stuff that I'm curious to see if the players can find a way to be at ease with eventually, or if it's just going to be uncomfortable the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, too, agents and players have always been kind of concerned with turning over too much of their, you know, health information, whether it is blood testing or, you know, anything that is too intrusive. So there's that aspect of it as well, on top of the fact that you're asking these guys to stay here for months. So I get why some players are looking at this and they're frustrated. But let's talk about that a bit, because players, it seems like certain players want to sit out. And we've heard from guys like Kyrie Irving, Dwight Howard, Avery Bradley. Guys that spoke up on the call want to sit out, and there are a number of reasons for that. You know, there are not only the injury risks, the health risks, and the thoughts about living in this bubble and how they feel about that, but also the feeling that this could distract from the Black Lives Matter movement. Do you feel like, and one thing the NBA has said is that if guys want to sit out, then they have to notify their team by June 24th, and they'll get some deduction in pay, but there's no punishment for them, and then their team can sign a replacement player to sub in for them. Do you think we'll see a lot of players sit out, or do you think it'll be just a handful of guys here and there?
I mean, right now, I'd probably lean more towards a handful, because, you know, the call that the players had last Friday, which was 80 plus, you know, approximately 80 players, maybe 90. The one thing that you got to really remember is that just because a guy got on that call doesn't mean he's not playing. They just wanted to voice their concerns, share perspective. But to this point, and you named the main guys that we know have major concerns, the Avery Bradleys and Dwight Howards and such, and Kyrie Irving. Kyrie wasn't playing anyway, so take him off the list. And I'm just not seeing it as a major movement until I start hearing more names. And I certainly respect the way those guys feel, but when it comes to the basketball calculus and just kind of how it might impact these playoffs, you know, you're just not talking about, to me, the type of thing just yet that's truly moving the needle. Now, it actually, ironically, it does move the needle for the Lakers, because if Dwight Howard and Avery both sat out, those are two important role players that could impact the Lakers' ability to win a championship. But if you look at it from a league-wide standpoint, and I know we're going to get into this, but the fact that LeBron wasn't on that call was key. And I think if he had been on that call, and I don't believe Giannis was on the call either. So the guys that matter the most to the NBA seem to be 100%, you know, full go, ready to play.
Yeah, and you broke that news for The Athletic that LeBron James wasn't on the call, and it's, you know, we know that he wants to play, or at least that's what's been reported. And you know, he feels like he can help the Black Lives Matter movement while also playing. He doesn't feel like, you know, he has to sit out to make a difference and affect change. You know, based on what you're hearing, what's LeBron's stance in all this, and how significant is that? I mean, we saw Patrick Beverley tweet, "If LeBron wants to play, we're going to play." And I know some people thought that was, you know, sarcastic. Some people thought it was a jab at LeBron. It was kind of hard to tell. But, you know, do you think LeBron being on the side of resuming the season is really significant?
Yeah, I do for sure. Because, you know, he, you know, not to play into the nickname, but he is the king of this league when it comes to one singular individual talent. Giannis is your reigning MVP, probably two-time MVP, plenty of other incredible players. But if you talk about all-time greats, the guy who's still on the court, it's LeBron. And, you know, he wants to play. He feels like essentially, I mean, first of all, he's had so much impact off the court his whole career, but certainly these past few years, that what I think is so interesting is that he basically already has his own ecosystem in place when it comes to, you know, when it comes to these sorts of issues, and whether it's building a school in his hometown of Akron, Ohio, or the new advocating for African American voting rights groups, you know, that are helping with a very important issue heading into the November election. Point being, Alex, like LeBron has all these different mechanisms to make change that are in place. And he then is free to go do his day job, go play ball, and then make the most use as possible of the stage that ESPN and TNT are going to afford him once he gets there. Now, that's just not the type of profile that most guys in the league have. And that's where I think, you know, you're seeing, and I haven't talked to LeBron personally on this, but I guarantee you he respects everybody's point of view and understands that some guys don't have those types of things in place, and don't have the ability to make the kind of change that he can while playing. And so they feel like maybe their voice is best heard by sitting out. And so we'll see kind of who comes and who doesn't. But LeBron's thing is different. And then we don't need to be naive. Like, does the man care about possibly going to win his fourth championship at this stage of his career? Of course he does. I mean, that's a major driving factor and something he doesn't want to lose.
Right, if you're LeBron or you're Giannis, the fact that you're so close to possibly winning a championship has to, you know, factor into your thought process. But you also have guys like Garrett Temple and Ed Davis, who I interviewed for Hoops Hype, and they pointed out that they feel like a bigger impact can be made if guys are playing and they can, you
Yeah.
know, earn that money and donate a portion of it. So I understand that thought process too. I think everyone has the right intentions and they want to help. They're just not sure what the best way to help is, and that's kind of what's being debated at this point. But when I talked to Ed, he made an interesting point. You know, you kind of mentioned this too. You know, I think people initially saw, oh, 80 players were on this call on Friday, and everyone's thinking, oh God, 80 players don't want to play. But a lot of those guys were just listening in, or they wanted
Right.
to just have that conversation. Ed was on that
Right.
call, and he said, you know, there were 10 players who spoke, and only half of them were for sitting out. So it seems like that group is pretty small. So my question for you is, do you think there's any way that the season will be canceled? Ed said that he's 99.9% sure that the league will resume play and that this plan will go through. You know, I think if anything, we would just have a number of guys that sit out. Do you think that the season, you know, could possibly be canceled, or that the season is in jeopardy?
No, I don't. And if it is, whatever small percentage chance there might be, I would, you know, assign that to the coronavirus threat as opposed to the various viewpoints on Black Lives Matter. Because I do think that what will come out of this that will be positive is that even if it's a small group of players who are raising these valid points about Black Lives Matter and the question, which I think is incredibly fair, of, you know, what's the smartest way to proceed and to make the most impact on society, they're forcing the NBA's hand to do even more on that front. Now, we know the league is pretty progressive already, but, you know, now what they're pushing them to do, and I think this is, we're going to see more substance on this front in the next month, is okay, enough with the hashtags, enough with the videos that go viral. You know, what policy are you pushing in government to, you know, to enact change when it comes to equality, when it comes to police brutality, things of that nature? You know, they want real boots on the ground change. And I think that those players who are speaking up now are doing a good thing because it's going to have impact on that front. I just think, though, I mean, listen, I don't know where you fall on this, Alex, but as a citizen, take my NBA reporter hat off, I really understand their point about sports possibly being a deterrent and possibly being a distraction. You know, last weekend, my family and I went with some neighbors and had a really powerful time at a local rally for a Black Lives Matter rally. And I thought to myself, like, okay, so we went, we spent the time, but, you know, what if the Jazz were playing the Thunder that day? You know, we had X amount of people out there as it was. You know, how many people just kind of go, oh man, I don't know, I want to see this game, you know, and they don't go out. And I think that's just human nature, is that, you know, these guys, as great as they are at hoops, you know, what they do, you know, in kind of, you know, in its truest sense, is to distract and entertain people from quote unquote real life. And right now, that's just not something that a lot of players want to see happen.
Yeah, and it's not a coincidence that the movement has taken off so much and gotten so much bigger during this time when there are no distractions. There is no sports, there's no movies, no concerts. You know, people usually could quote unquote stick to sports, but now there's not sports to stick to. So everyone's not only focused on it, but talking about it and having these conversations. And, you know, we've seen so many players step up and protest and emerge as leaders and use their platform too. So they're focused on it as well. And, you know, I think right now people are, whether you know about this or wanted to, you know, learn about this or not, it's in your timeline. People are talking about it. It's a huge thing. So yeah, I get why players are thinking, look, if we come back and play, then all of a sudden people could just shift their attention away from it. And, you know, people won't continue talking about this and aren't, they won't be forced to listen. So I get that frustration and that concern. But then, you know, you have some players that are saying, well, look, we're going to have so many eyes on us if we do resume play. We're going to have a huge platform because, you know, you look at people are sports fans are missing sports so much that, you know, they're watching Korean baseball or these different things. You know, we saw things have right now. If you are the Last Dance or even like a Tiger King or one of these things, if you have the world's attention, you're gonna blow up. So these guys are
Alex,
thinking.
last Friday on ESPN, and I wrote this a few days ago. Last Friday on ESPN, it was a show called The Foosballers, which is like no ex you know, no explanation necessary. And then they showed, and this is a great movie, it's just not quote unquote conventional sports. They showed Free Solo, the rock climbing documentary. You know, that was on the worldwide leader. And so they will have a stage. And I'm now going to officially be that guy who argues both sides of the debate. Because here's the other flip side that we haven't really addressed, and I think make a ton of sense. Let's just focus on the African American men within the league. These men have access to a lot of cash and a lot of money that can do a lot of good in their communities. And I know there are players who feel like, listen, we don't want to slow the movement down, but what sense does it possibly make to leave that kind of money on the table? Not only for your families, so first and foremost, them taking care of their families, but from there, that's money that can impact change. That's money that can help in other ways. And we know how just massive these numbers are. If the playoffs didn't happen, I've reported this a couple of times, the national TV money would be around $900 million. That is, you know, obviously split between the players and the owners. You got regional sports network money within that that ends up partly going to the players. It does not make sense at all from an economic standpoint for these players who want to do good things in the community to kind of lose some of their ability to do it financially by leaving all that money on the table.
Yeah, and that was part of Ed Davis and Garrett Temple's argument too, that, you know, we shouldn't force guys to miss out on having generational wealth, because that can be a huge, you know, that can really help this community, guys around the NBA. You know, they also, I know Ed had put forward saying, let's all donate 1% of BRI, or let's all put a portion of our salaries aside and donate that to Black Lives Matter or different causes like that. So yeah, these guys are thinking, let's not lose $1.2 billion in salaries, which is what it was estimated at. That's right. What, you know, ESPN had put out there. Let's, you know, take a portion of that money, let's earn it, and then donate a bunch of it to these causes. And that could be a huge, that could make a huge impact. And then Ed brought up a good point too. If this season doesn't happen, if it is canceled because a lot of players, you know, are resisting playing, then we could have next season in jeopardy as well, because all of a sudden the owners likely would tear up the collective bargaining agreement. We could have a lockout, and then, you know, they may want to make the CBA less player friendly and more owner friendly and team friendly.
Right.
So, I mean, then you're talking about losing billions and billions of dollars if next season doesn't happen too. So, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of financial reasons to play.
It's a pretty awful idea to, like, you know, let's not forget players and owners, technically speaking, are on opposite sides of the table, right? Even though they unite, you know, in certain environments, but from a negotiating standpoint, they're on opposite sides of the table. So do you really think it's wise to open the door legally, like you already said, for them to rip up the CBA? And then where do you think their priorities will be in these times when they are faced with the reality of having games without fans for a very long time? Like, it could be all of next season. We don't know yet. Until there's a vaccine, the fan component is completely uncertain. So that would be disastrous for the players. I mean, if you have to renegotiate under these conditions, they're going to get destroyed at the bargaining table.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. I'm with you, though. I feel like we're probably going to have a season. We'll just see some players sit out. But it'll be interesting to see on June 24th how many players notify their team that they're not going to play. Just a few more things for you. There's been some talk about how the NBA will handle home court advantage and other logistical things like that. It's hard to replicate the advantage that those teams would have in a normal postseason. But, you know, have they decided how they'll reward those teams at the top of the standings? Was that in the memo at all?
It was not that I saw, you know, in full disclosure, I had to channel my college brain and browse that 113 page memo. You can't pretend to have read every single word. I didn't see anything in there regarding home court edge. I don't have clarity, unfortunately, on that front. I did, you know, I enjoyed my doppelganger, Dave McMenamin's story a couple weeks ago from ESPN, talking about all the different things that had been proposed by teams, where teams were trying to get, you know, something back in return for losing home court advantage. But unfortunately right now, I just don't know what that looks like.
Howard Beck and I talked about this on the podcast recently, but, you know, we saw the lockout league years ago at Impact Basketball. You know, if you go to the training sites in the offseason, you see these pickup games that have refs. Obviously, you know, this is going to be a little bit different than that because you have, you know, super high stakes. It's going to be playoff games that are played in this environment. There's going to be coaching staffs and the coaching staffs and obviously like that, everything like that. But when you look at how these games will be played without fans, with so many different changes being made because of the pandemic, you know, what do you expect this to be like? How is it going to play out? I mean, I'm curious to see how players are impacted if there's no fans and it almost has a pickup like environment.
Yeah, I mean, weird is the word that comes to mind, but that doesn't do it justice. You know, it's going to, I'm sure, feel surreal when you're there. You know, there's some discussion that maybe they pipe in, you know, fake noise, whether it's from NBA 2K or something of that nature. Yeah, if you're a referee, you're thinking about how all of a sudden these conversations that you have had for years upon years with players on the court that are typically kind of just, they become private because that environment was so loud, the fans weren't going to hear it because you had the music and you had, you know, the 17,000 people making noise bearing down on you. And now, if you tell player X to shut up and play and you maybe take a tougher tone than you would like everybody to hear, well, you better pick the right tone because everybody's going to hear. And stuff like that, you know, I mean, the media guy in me, I'm here for all of it. I want to hear that. I want to hear the player trash talk, the real stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I remember just a quick flashback, like when Draymond Green Remember that time when Draymond went after Paul Pierce when he was
Yeah.
on the bench,
You're not Kobe.
and he's like, "Yeah, nobody loves you. You're not Kobe." Like that type of stuff where you go, "Oh man, like this is real." It would be fun, but so that might be the perk. But I mean, listen, chances are that they're gonna find a way to pipe in enough noise to kind of quell some of that from getting out. The media seating, I don't think, is going to be very close, even for people who are inside the bubble. I don't know just yet exactly what that will look like, but I just think it's going to be odd, and I can't certainly relate to being a professional athlete, but I've got to imagine that you better find other ways to get fired up in a game, because if the crowd was the thing that energized you when you hit that floor, it's going to take time for guys to kind of readjust their own wiring. I don't know if you've been have you been to the G League Showcase yet in Vegas?
Yeah,
Since it's been
this was
there.
my first year going to it, but when I first heard about how they're going to set this up, that was my first thought that it's very similar to that.
Yeah, for sure. Like I remember just kind of doing a double take when I went into that facility at the MGM where you got three courts back to back to back with curtains in between and there's no fans, but you have front office and coaches and scouts and media members. But really, most of the people in attendance are talking to one another and barely focused on the game. So if you're one of those players, I would imagine that that takes some focus where you have to say, and you just, I got to assume that these front office guys are looking at me and I got to really compete. But the human mind is a tricky tool. Like you're going to have to do some MJ chip on your shoulder, fabricate competitive edge type stuff. You know what I mean? Like, or find your favorite song to get you in the right headspace. 'Cause I think it's just going to be a weird vibe.
Yeah, and I think with the regular season games, I think they're talking about having multiple games happening at the same time. So we could see that exact same kind of layout where you have the curtains between the courts and, games are being played. So that'll be interesting. I think the first things I thought of were G League Showcase and then the old Orlando Summer League, which is, didn't have fans, unlike the Summer League in Vegas. So yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what that looks like. Just a few more questions here just to talk some basketball with you before we wrap up. As of now, if you had to predict, which teams do you have advancing to the NBA Finals and who do you have winning it all?
NBA Finals. I'll give the East to the good old Bucks. I like what they're doing. Although I did notice the other day, I just thought this was interesting. It doesn't mean anything, but they lost four out of five games before the season was suspended. So, I'm assuming the Bucks will find their way when they get restarted. And they're healthy. Giannis had that hyperextended knee that he was coming back from right before the season was suspended, and by all accounts, he's feeling really good again, so that's important. In the East, I don't know. It's like I got my head and my heart, and I'm just being honest here. We don't have any rooting interest, as in these players and these teams. But there is part of me that just feels like the karma and the energy is going for LeBron getting to the finals again. Now, if there's no Dwight, if there's no Avery, then who the heck knows? And then I can eat crow when the Clippers get there instead, because they are an incredibly talented group. That, I mean, think about this. They had generally been considered to have underperformed to this point in the season, and they're still right there.
Yeah.
And and they're also like the ultimate kind of like the load management, take the long road type team that was trying to peak and build at the very end. And Doc Rivers, during this downtime, has talked about his favorite phrase of he wants his guys to win the weight, and be focused and be in shape, as they prepare to head back. So it's a very long-winded answer to your question, but if I got to pick two teams, I'll go Bucks Lakers.
Yeah, I think the teams or the players that had access to a court are going to have such an advantage. There was one
Yeah.
Eastern Conference strength and conditioning coach I talked to, and he said not a single player on their team had access to a court. So they were trying to find football fields and tracks and stuff for these guys to work out at. But, their guys are going to come back and be super rusty, even with a training camp and a few exhibition games. So, yeah, there's definitely, I mean, the guys that had a court, I know Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Lou Williams all had a court that they had access to. Patrick Patterson mentioned that when he was on the podcast. A guy like LeBron, who we know puts $1.5 million, according to Maverick Carter, into his body every year, and he has cryotherapy and a cord and all this stuff at his home. I think those guys are
Right.
going to have a huge advantage. But yeah, I have the same prediction as of right now. I actually have Lakers over Bucks. But I'm hoping we have Lakers Clippers in the Western Conference Finals. That would just be amazing. This whole season, I feel like it's been building up to that, and we all want it. So hopefully, it actually happens.
Yeah, I'm gonna just to finish since you went even farther and made your finals prediction. I'll just for the sake of, although I do believe this, I think I would probably have the Bucks over the Lakers by an edge. I, you know, more shooting. Giannis, not even in his prime yet, but coming into a new place where I could see him having the competitive psyche and the wherewithal as a leader. That sounds corny, but it matters. To find a way to get past LeBron and his group, who at different times of the season, we have wondered if they were deep enough. So, I think I might have the Bucks winning
Brook Lopez stepping up on the Disney stage. He's been waiting his whole life for this. No,
that one. Where are you going now, Brooke?
that
I'm staying here.
would be an amazing would be an amazing series. Last thing for you, who's your sleeper team that you're excited to watch? Is there a team that you feel like can make things interesting and go deep in the playoffs and maybe surprise some people?
I mean, it's a pretty predictable answer, but I'm here for the revenge of Dame Lillard and the healthy Portland Trail Blazers with Yusuf Nurkic coming back and Zach Collins. Now, I'm not predicting conference finals. I just think making some noise.
Yeah.
Now they would have to get obviously into the playoffs first by way likely of that play-in tournament. I just think, I mean, Dame has obviously established himself as just such a fantastic competitor and a guy who doesn't matter that they've struggled this year. He wants to win. And this whole thing, if there was anything good out of it for anybody, that fate was pretty good to the Blazers. Like they are going to get right and have guys, available who helped them get to the conference finals last year. And that matters. And Dame is, he's got that playoff mentality and has the ability to make some noise. So I'd probably pick those guys.
Yeah, and Dame is so mentally tough and clutch that I feel like a situation like this, it doesn't matter where he's at or what the
Oh
environment
yeah.
is like. He's just gonna, dominate. So I think
Well,
that's a
you
good
saw the
pick.
other day he just put it on wax and said he thinks they could beat the Lakers.
Yeah, I love
You
his
know, like he
confidence.
just went ahead and said it. Yeah.
He's the man. Last thing for you, who's your current most valuable player selection?
I got Giannis, and I don't think it's particularly close. LeBron's had a fantastic year, and it's been a while. I'm a little rusty on breaking down this argument before the season was suspended. We were getting close to, all of us would write our stories explaining why we voted a certain way. But I felt like Giannis had created a gap there. And it the only thing, I mean, LeBron is going to hit the end of his career, and it's going to be another one of those situations where we could look back at an all-time great's career and pick out a bunch of years where he could have won MVP and he didn't. But if you look at Giannis in a vacuum this season, which is what you have to do, his production is just absolute insanity. It's legitimately Wilt Chamberlain type stuff on a per 48, per 36 minute basis. It reminds me a little bit of 2014-15 when Steph Curry won it. And I know that's a weird comparison because you're talking big versus small, but Steph and the Warriors were so dominant that Steph didn't even play in, I think, 22 fourth quarters that year. And to understand what he did that year, you had to go to the old per 36 machine, so to speak. And there's some of that with Giannis this year because his numbers are bonkers anyway.
Yeah.
But to really get what he's doing, you got to look at it through that prism. And you also got to remember and listen, not in a million years would I say a disparaging word about Wilt's career. Guy was incredible. But Wilt, his ability to play huge minutes and keep doing what he did was a major part of his legacy. But Wilt legitimately, I mean, he had years where he averaged 46, 47 minutes a game. And so when we compare the numbers on that basis, that's largely why he had years where he, just the numbers were eye-popping. So I think it's Giannis, and I think any other choice would be the wrong one.
Yeah, I agree. Giannis is my pick as well. And I think the fact that, he doesn't have the same, he doesn't have another superstar alongside of him. You can make the
Yeah.
argument that Anthony Davis has been just as important as LeBron throughout this season, and he's been exceptional as well. So the fact that Giannis is doing this and, having the best record in the league with Chris Middleton and Brooke Lopez and a great supporting cast. I mean, the team fits him well. Mike Budenholzer does a fantastic job of, getting that team to play really well, and the pieces are really nice, but there's not another star player. So I think we tend to see, MVP voters will kind of discredit certain guys for having another star alongside them. So I think that factors
Yep.
in too. Sam, thank you so much for joining me, man. This was fantastic. It's so much fun to catch up with you, and hopefully we have some basketball to talk about soon, and we're not just talking about logistics and plans in the future, and we actually can talk about some hoops.
Just get make sure you get your magic band, Alex. Get your magic band.
Exactly.
Thank you, man. It was great to hear from you. I know it's been a while, so thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much. Make sure you guys follow Sam on Twitter at Sam_Amick. Make sure you check out his work on The Athletic. He does a fantastic job of covering the NBA, reporting news, one of the best in the business. And if you guys want to hear more episodes of the Hoopsite podcast, check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere podcasts are found. Until next time, thanks for listening.